3348 is the Marine Spill Response Corporation. We had a fair amount of discussion with their incurring of liability in the process of cleaning up and not taking anything away from the original person who spilled, nor anything beyond, what was it, what's the standard we have here?
Grossly negligent.
They still have to be responsible if they were grossly negligent.
That's sinister.
Madam Chair, there are no amendments to the bill.
No amendments to the bill?
Madam Chair, I'd move the bill to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, are the sponsors here? We probably ought to get their word in blood that we're not going to have any other floating issues attached to this bill when it gets to the House.
Well.
Oh, when it gets to the, well, it won't, that's.
We're not, the House is it, this thing going.
There are no amendments, okay, so it's up to us to decide whether we want to amend this bill with all those bad things.
Good bill.
Okay, Senator Schumaker has moved House Bill 3348 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion, call the roll, please. Senator Springer?
Madam Chair, I'm going to resist the temptation to ask that this go to Ag and Natural Resources Committee, although that's where the major oil spill legislation has originated. And this, to me, is properly, ought to be part of that discussion. I've had a chance to talk with the sponsors at length, and they make a good case, but I kind of have this old-fashioned sense that if you're negligent, you ought to be responsible. So I can't support this bill.
Okay. Anyone else? Call the roll, please.
Senator Brockman?
Aye.
Senator Ben?
Aye.
Senator Hamby?
Aye.
Senator Schumaker?
Aye.
Senator Springer?
No.
Chair Cohen?
Aye. Okay. 2374.
Madam Chair, there's a proposed amendment to this bill.
Okay.
In keeping with our hearing the last.
Bill has amendments, he will explain in keeping with our hearing. 2374. This is a court administrator bill. Has to do with requesting financial information from banks and other financial institutions to verify indigency or not. Bill?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, this bill was last before us on May 29th. At that time, we had some testimony concerning the discovery or the request of information from state agencies and how that may be contrary to federal law. And before you have an amendment, not in LC form, but it will be in LC form before it goes to floor, obviously, dated June 3rd, 1991. And this makes it clear that administrators shall forward to the state agency a certification signed by the person about whom the requested information is sought, and then removal of the comma there, the comma should not be there, that authorizes a release of information. And this information relates to indigent defense and the person being indigent requesting counsel from the court. And amends on page 2, line 10 of the bill.
Okay, other discussions?
I'll move the amendment.
Okay, Senator Hamby moves the amendment dated June 3rd, offered by the Oregon Judicial Department. Are there objections to the amendment? Hearing none, so ordered, thank you. Okay. How are we on this bill? Senator Hamby moves House Bill 2374 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion, call the roll, please, Kate.
Senator Brockman?
Aye.
Senator Hamby?
Aye.
Senator Schumaker?
Aye.
Senator Springer?
Aye.
Chair Cohen?
Aye.
Motion carried, thank you. House Bill 2266.
Madam Chair, this bill was last before the committee also May 29th, and I have a set of amendments which takes out on page 2, lines 40 and 41 and 42 that were left in there inadvertently.
2266.
In my recollection, that this bill deals with the notification under the Tulsa case, is that right?
Yes, Madam Chair, as it relates to people who have an interest in wills,
right, as opposed to creditors, which is quite similar to the Tulsa case.
Sir Shoemaker needs it. We need to give him a... And we have amendments. Sort of remain, those just clean up amendments.
Dash three amendments, Madam Chair. Yes, they remove language that was inadvertently left in the bill after amendments made in the House.
I'll move the A3 amendments, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Senator Hanby has moved the dash A3 amendments. Objections? Hearing none, so ordered. Thank you. Senator Shoemaker, I think this is one of the bills that you missed the other night. Okay, Senator Shoemaker moves House Bill 2266 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
I'm not sure I'd be the movers.
Okay, well, that's okay. We'll go. Let's. That doesn't mean you necessarily have to carry.
All right, hope not.
Discussion, folks. Thank you. Call the roll, please, Kate.
Senator Brockman.
Aye.
Senator Hanby.
Aye.
Senator Shoemaker.
Aye.
Senator Springer.
Aye.
Chair Cohen.
Aye.
Motion carried. House Bill 2382.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This bill was last before us on May 10th and is brought to us from the International Law Section of the Oregon State Bar. And I believe Mr. Bruce Anderson is here if we have any detailed questions. But there are no amendments to the bill, and what it does is, under certain arrangements, allows for causes of action to be brought arising from pollution beyond the boundaries of the United States if there's a comparable agreement between, for example, the province of Canada and the state of Oregon. At the last meeting, we had some objection expressed to this bill from the Associated Oregon Industries, but I got a letter today dated May 31 from Mr. Witte, James Witte, who testified here the last time. Said, as promised, we have researched House Bill 2382 and find no problems and therefore have no objections. Period.
Okay. Pleasure of the committee on this bill. I guess it allows us to sue or be countersued by Canadians if they have a reciprocal agreement.
I'll move the bill.
Okay, Senator Shoemaker moves.
To the floor with the due pass.
Senator Shoemaker moves House Bill 2382 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. We have no amendments, right?
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Okay, discussion. Thank you. Call the roll, please.
Senator Brockman.
Aye.
Senator Hanby.
Aye.
Senator Shoemaker.
Aye.
Senator Springer.
Aye.
Chair Cohen.
Aye.
Motion carried. Thank you. House Bill 2668.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This bill was last before the committee on May 13th, and it relates to extending the statute of limitations for child abuse from the current 5 years after attaining the age of 18 to 6 years. From attaining the age of 18, or if the injured person has not discovered the injury or the causal connection between the injury and the child abuse, then 3 years from the date of discovery or when discovery should have taken place. I have a set of amendments, Madam Chair, for the committee to consider.
Yeah, I just through some discussions about putting some ending time on this as to leave it open. We have an amendment which the committee might choose to consider, which talks about a limitation of 40 years of age.
Right, Madam Chair. This would be an ultimate statute of repose, meaning that when the person, the victim, has become 40, then regardless of the date of discovery, the action would could not be brought forward.
So other than that, the bill is in... Just sort of putting some far-end tag on that. So we need to have some discussion to see, to understand what it is. Questions? We had a fair lot of...
It's reasonable.
Yeah, amendment. I think it is.
I'll move A-3.
Okay, Senator Hamby moves the A-3 amendments. We've had a lot of communications in support of this bill, and I think that it is, well, it does stretch to a large degree what kind of evidence you're going to end up with at that level. I do think it's, I'm certainly willing to support the efforts to be made for people to, when they discover or when they know that this is, comes to their attention or they're out of the sort of their, should I say, sphere of understanding that we ought to try to make some modifications. Are there objections to the A3 amendments? Hearing none, so ordered. Thank you. Senator Hamby moves House Bill 2668 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion, Senator Brockman.
Madam Chair, didn't we have a bill in here or someplace that, that changed the definition of sexual penetration with a foreign object as male?
Yes, we did pass. We have it. Yes, we have.
I don't remember.
We had a hearing on it. I'm not sure we've actually passed it out yet, but when we do...
Because that is stated in this
right. When
this
we
bill.
Do, there will be a conflict amendment which will bring through and
Just checking.
Re-amend this bill.
Okay.
Call the roll, please.
Senator Brockman.
Aye.
Senator Hamby.
Aye.
Senator Shoemaker.
Aye.
Senator Springer.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hill.
Aye.
Chair Cohen.
Aye. Motion carried. Let's move to House Bill 2375. If you're ready on the professional corporation piece, Senator Shoemaker, or if you want to go ahead and take up the House Bill 2594 first.
Well, I think we're ready.
Okay. House Bill 2375.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This bill relates to the professional corporations, and the key issue in this bill, the one with the most controversy, is that of vicarious liability of between professional shareholders of the bill. I have two sets of amendments before me. One is the dash 4, which is a technical amendment that would clarify that it applies to shareholders of a professional corporation within Oregon. That was submitted to us by the Stoll Reeves Law Firm, and I have a rough dash 8 amendment, which relates to a cap on joint and several liability.
Great. Okay, we need to then figure out where, who's here, and where these amendments came from.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, the dash 4 amendments to the engrossed version, as I said earlier, came from a law firm, Stoll Reeves. And they're concerned is that if their amendment is not passed in, it could be read as requiring that a foreign professional corporation rendering professional services have a majority of its shares held by persons licensed in Oregon, even only one or two shareholders or employees of the corporation actually renders professional services in Oregon.
So this was testified to at the work at the hearing.
Last hearing.
This is the follow-up on that. Just closes the...
That's correct, Madam Chair. The Dash 8 amendments are...
Okay, let's talk about the A4s first.
Okay.
Anyone have any objections to the A4 amendments? Get those incorporated. Okay, the Chair would move the A4 amendments. Hearing no objections, that's taken care of. Okay, now we get to the nut of the bill and see whether we're going to end up with a bill or not.
Madam Chair, if I could just run, there are some other additional parts to it. And on line 1 of page 1 of the Dash 8, it says, delete permitted them and inserted expressly authorized. What that is intended to do under current professional corporation law, you are permitted to operate in any other business form permitted by law, regulation, or standard of conduct of the profession. Permitted has been interpreted to mean unless the regulating body or the statute says you can't do it, you can do it. It's more acquiesce. This would change it to expressly authorized because the issue is out there of professionals incorporating under the Business Corporate Act. So what this would do is that, for example, a lawyer who's incorporated under the Business Act could not do so unless the Oregon State Bar expressly said you can incorporate under the Business Act. The rest of the going on to the page 2 is some language that I've been working with and Senator Shoemaker on professional corporations in the law of Oregon right now. A shareholder in a corporation, a professional corporation, is vicariously liable for the actions of other shareholders in the corporation. The bill as currently drafted would eliminate that vicarious liability so that if one shareholder were liable and his assets were not sufficient to cover the liability, the other shareholder would not be liable for his actions. It would be treating shareholders in a professional corporation similar to shareholders in a business corporation. This bill, what this does is it sets forth vicarious liability not exceeding $500,000 for each shareholder licensed as a physician by the Board of Medical Examiners, and I'm reading from lines 3, I, J, and K. However, vicarious liability shall not be imposed to the extent there are assets, including insurance, available to satisfy the claim in the amount of $500,000 times the number of shareholders licensed within the state to render the same professional services. Then it would set a different cap, vicarious liability, for all the professions holding licenses to render professional services in the state, not to exceed $300,000 for each shareholder who hold a license to render professional services within the state. However, here, vicarious liability should not be imposed to the extent there are assets, including insurance, available to satisfy the claim in the amount of $300,000 times the number of shareholders licensed within the state.
Okay. Mr. Schumacher, you want to speak to this,
sure.
Invite people up to...
Yeah, this is the bill that I've been thinking a lot about since I became aware of it a couple of months ago. And I guess I'm not comfortable with totally releasing professional people from vicarious liability. I think that's part of your responsibility as a professional to take responsibility for the people that you associate with. And if there's a financial responsibility, that sort of is, that's what says it. That's what makes it so. On the other hand, I think not have a limit on that is not fair. I think it should be a sufficient amount so that it's a significant liability, enough so that you take it really seriously, but not so much that it would ruin you. And of course, I'm very aware of the Labenthal and Horwath situation in which fellow shareholders in distant states acted quite ethically and illegally, and their liability was visited on domestic shareholders in amounts which will ruin them if a way out of that is not found. Striking the balance is the tough part. So what I'm suggesting here is what I think is a balance, and that is that there be a limitation of vicarious liability of $300,000 for most professionals, $500,000 for physicians, recognizing that medical malpractice is probably the most sensitive of the malpractice situations where you have personal, damage to people's health, and does result in the greatest amount of damage and the most frequent litigation. So I'm suggesting a $300,000 vicarious liability cap for most and a $500,000 liability cap for doctors, and also suggesting that if the professional corporation carries insurance and has other assets available to respond to the claim equal to the total of the vicarious liability cap times the number of shareholders, Oregon shareholders, that would either eliminate or, to the extent of those assets, reduce that vicarious liability. In other words, the professional corporation can insure against that vicarious liability, and the limits of that insurance would be reasonable. I know there's a problem about stacking and all those other things. I think those things can be worked out. The other change that you'll find in this proposed amendment is that even for interstate corporations, that the vicarious liability be contained among those who are practicing within this state. That the total cap relate to the number of shareholders. Each shareholder within this state would have that cap, and the insurance that the corporation would have to avoid that potential personal vicarious liability would relate to the number of shareholders practicing within this state. So it's a proposal. I think it's reasonable. I don't know that there's a perfect answer here, but I'm suggesting this. At least it's something we can focus on.
Okay. Other comments?
Madam Chair, I don't know if Senator Shoemaker mentioned it, but on the page 3, you'll see starting at line 16, a foreign professional corporation who practices in the state. One problem you have right now, one potential problem, is the fact that you have foreign professional corporations practicing in the state, and there's some question out there as to how they would be treated. This is intended to make sure that a shareholder of a foreign professional corporation who practices in this state shall be treated the same as a domestic professional corporation shareholder. Mm-hmm. Because there's a potential loophole right now. There are law firms in Portland whose main office is in Seattle who are professional corporations out of the state of Washington where there is no vicarious liability on shareholders.
Okay. Further comments? Senator Springer.
I'm trying to sort through this amendment that Senator Shoemaker shared with us, and I don't know if there are any kind of equal protection arguments that would apply, or if we're able to sort of draw some kind of rational basis for the distinctions we've made in terms of what recovery is going to be available between, I guess, different classes of people who may be asserting liability and seeking recovery.
I acknowledge that there could be an equal protections problem, and I think it'd be appropriate to have legislative counsel take a look at that.
I guess in that light, you interested in him, Mr. When you come up? He's waiting patiently.
If Tom can help me out, I would welcome the assistance.
Okay, Mr. Cootie.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Bunn.
We might first do a straw poll and see if there's enough interest in the amendments to spend a lot of time on them.
Yeah, well, I think we just need to, let's answer this one question first.
I shared Senator Springer's concerns. I particularly have concern about healthcare providers' limitation at 500 and others at 300. Now, the healthcare provider that we refer to is the DO, the MD, and the podiatrist. But you also have nurse practitioners, psychologists, and other healthcare providers who are doing closely enough of the very same thing that I am concerned that you could run into an equal protection. Why are they being distinguished against versus the others? And so I think there is a risk that if you do pass this, that you'll have a challenge on that basis. The other problem that I see is I don't know that you're really accomplishing anything because, you know, 500,000 times the number of shareholders can get to be a huge number, and not every malpractice policy for physicians stacks, so that you may only have one limit applicable, and so you're not really giving any relief to the other shareholders. Some of the policies do, some don't, and we know the lawyers doesn't. So I think you're creating a real problem when you get into that area. But my big concern is if you're going to go to this some type of a numbered cap, that it be uniform so we don't encounter that type of a challenge in the courts.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, the distinction that I think exists is that the extensive liabilities of the health care providers are not found among chiropractors and podiatrists and nurse practitioners, but are found probably among surgeons, neurologists, and others who are performing very intricate procedures, which are reserved, and properly so, for physicians. And I mean, they're the guys who really do things which can cause extreme damage, and they're the ones who are compensated.
Well, there's a yes and no to that. I mean, yes, there is a part of that that I think is in reality, but there's another part. The failure to diagnose breast cancer isn't limited to MDs. I mean, that's nurse practitioners, chiropractors, physician's assistants, things of that sort. Lawyers, when you're handling these savings and loan cases, are talking big, big numbers. And so if we're going to give some relief to the professional, let's give it either totally or let's give it uniformly, and that's what I propose.
Okay. Senator Hill?
Madam Chair, I guess that, especially in light of those comments, I've tried to think a lot about this situation, too, and I guess, oddly enough, for the medical profession, my perception is that people tend to rely on an individual doctor in their situations, and I don't know how much you would hold other physicians who happen to be working in the same clinic or whatever, but when it comes to other professional corporations, when it comes to law firms, accounting firms, and those type of situations, you really are relying on the reputation of that firm. You go there with the idea you're not maybe even looking for a specific doctor. You're looking for this law firm, this accounting firm has this reputation. And if I go there, I may not know anything about the individual that I end up having to work with. But I feel that that whole firm, that accounting firm, this brokerage firm, or whatever, that whole entity is behind me. And that's the way that I look at it. So I have just come to the conclusion that the amendments I have to, I think that this is quite an attempt to find that balance. But I think that there are advantages to bigness. The larger firms, the various types, make a lot of money, and that, to some degree, has a lot to do with their reputation. So I just think, frankly, that this is is really a bad policy. And I have to say that one of the most difficult things that all of us have in terms of professionals is policing ourselves as professions. And I think that when you have the hammer hanging over you, that my colleague can drag us down, I think that's a real good incentive to make sure that everybody toes the line and do as they should do. Because a lot of these situations get very difficult, and self-policing of professions is something that I'm not sure that there have been many professions, if any professions, who've been able to achieve it. And I think we should have as much pressure on to do that as possible. So I'm not going to be supporting the bill.
Okay, the bill as it stands, or the amendments.
Or the amendments, Madam Chair.
Okay, anybody else? Senator Bunn?
I think the amendments simply make it a little more confusing and complicated. I think the bill itself is workable.
So we got one for the bill, one against the bill, one for amendments. Okay?
Well, Madam Chair, let's put it to the test. I'll move the amendments. Although...